Welcome back to the Jet Plane, Season 2, Episode 5. I had to actually go back and look at the website to see what episode we're on, because it's been that long.
It has. It's been a minute.
It feels like it's been a really long time.
Absolutely.
But it probably hasn't been as long of a time as I feel like it's been.
It's probably been 2 months. I mean, it's
2 months, you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'd be around there.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while. You know, we took a little bit of a hiatus, mm-hmm. and I post about it on Facebook if you follow us on Facebook. But basically, I had a child, and Silas, you were in Vermont,
yeah,
at school for a semester.
So that made it hard to.
That did make it hard to do a podcast, and we're gonna try to do some remote things. But turns out that having a newborn takes a good bit of your time.
Yeah.
Who would have thought it? You know,
I bet.
I don't know. So it was a little bit more difficult to do that. But I posted a couple things that Sam and Edward did some recordings with me in Uganda, and I think those are super powerful. So if you haven't listened to those, I'd go and listen to that latest over. You know, I think it's a really powerful episode. So I'd go check it out. It's a little bit shorter, but
absolutely.
Good stuff. And actually, right now while we're talking about it, your dad was supposed to be in India.
Absolutely,
at this time,
yeah.
But some things changed in that plan, as plans do, and he actually now is in Kenya with your mom and my parents as well.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't know, you know some of the story as well, if you want to give some updates on
it. Yeah, so Edward, who I mean, you mentioned, has appeared on the podcast before through the
layovers.
Yes, thank you. Had a personal tragedy, had a family tragedy, with a bus crash that left a number of people, unfortunately, deceased.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was like 60-some people on the bus, but I think like 20-some died.
Yeah,
so pretty crazy.
And so just, I mean, horrifically tragic, obviously. And so the plans changed, like you said, plans do tend to change. And they decided it would be better to go and support him, and support his community. And that's why we're there over there, to just kind of offer some sports.
Yeah.
He's obviously somebody that's worked in with Hope 2 and things like that before, but also just somebody who's a friend. And so, kind of wanting to offer support from that perspective.
Yeah. And I talked to my dad actually the other day, and it sounds like it's been going well. I mean, as well as it can. It's just really hard time for a lot of families in the community. Mm-hmm. And it's in Kenya actually where Edward grew up. So he lives in Uganda, but you know, it's kind of in another area. And so it's a lot of people that he grew up around, and his siblings and such that are there. And so, but it sounds like they've been visiting some homes, and just kind of being with people. Sometimes being with people is all they need, just some prayer and some comfort. But
absolutely.
I know they're concocting some plans as far as, bringing some resources to that community to kind of help alleviate some of the pain. I think they're going to get a couple like dairy cows or whatever, which will produce, you know, milk for that whole area. Cause it's not a real big area necessarily either.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to get some things to be able to produce food and milk and clean water sources and stuff, such like that. So, I think that'll be cool. But yeah, I mean, as far as the trip goes, I think that it, like you said, Edward's a good friend of ours, and so it's cool that they can go over there and be with him and his family at that time and just reach out to that community. So yeah, not that that's necessarily what we're going to get into, but I guess to give a little update, because I think in episode 4 we mentioned something about your dad being on.
Yeah.
And obviously that changed for a number of reasons.
Sure.
We weren't back, and they went to Kenya, so... when he does return, you know, we'd love to have him on the podcast and hopefully get some updates as far as, you know, what does the next stint of the 5410 look like and what have we missed, you
mm-hmm.
know, so far. So, and I'm hoping that, you know, one of our biggest fans, my dad, I think that he's maybe going to do some recording with your dad and Edward as well while they're there.
Kind
of talk about a little bit of what they're in there, but I think also, too, they've been to some countries that we haven't covered those layovers, so to get more layovers as well.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Yeah, so...
I guess it goes to show, if you're a Reno fan, we'll hire you for the show.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Zach's run the jet plane.
Yeah.
My dad's run the jet plane. Or hopefully they're doing that, I don't know. But, yeah, so that'll be cool. But yeah, I mean, we're I think we're a decent bit into the flight now. You usually start with some turbulence, but we're going to get into some turbulence now. So keep your seatbelts on. I hope you're prepared for turbulence. We really didn't talk about it too much beforehand.
No, not at all. We did not. Seatbelt sign has not been on.
Yeah.
But we're hitting some rocky air here.
All right.
Now, the turbulence today, Joe, is a little bit interesting because it's something that I've talked to you about extensively, okay. Like on multiple occasions outside of the podcast.
Hopefully it's not literary.
It's not. No, not today. But it's something that I wanted to bring to the attention of the podcast and our listeners.
Okay.
Because I find it pretty fascinating. And I don't know if you do either, or if you do as well, or if you've kind of been satiating me to you about this. Surprise cultural artifact in Indiana. Do you know where I'm going with this when I say that?
Surprise cultural artifact of Indiana.
Something that I didn't know was culturally an Indiana thing. That I've talked to you about, and then you also were unaware this was in Indiana.
I'm going
to
say mashed potatoes and noodles.
It's not that. It's a good
thing. That's my favorite Indiana cultural thing.
Go ahead.
No, I don't know where this is going yet.
No, mac on breadsticks and nacho cheese.
Oh, yes.
Mac on breadsticks and nacho cheese. And we have talked about this, like I say, pretty extensively. And initially, because I had read this somewhere online, that this was an Indiana thing. Breadsticks and nacho cheese. And then... Initially, I know that you had given me some pushback, Joe, and said you felt like you had that before in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And so I went and did my own field research while I was out in Vermont with people from all over the country. And I polled some of my friends out there. None of them had ever heard of this. The people I polled, I guess I should give my data, was two people from Massachusetts, a guy from Connecticut, a girl from Nevada, and a guy from Pennsylvania.
Okay, so mostly East Coast, but...
Mostly, but one out west. West Coast.
Yeah.
But I feel like I got a good swath. It's a good number. Yeah. None of them had ever heard of this.
Yeah.
None of them were familiar with
it. Now, you say the Indiana thing, but what I'll say is, those are all almost coastal.
That's true.
I wonder, like, if you ask someone from Ohio or Illinois, I wonder if it's a Midwest thing, maybe.
Now, I'm excited to ask this, Joe. Okay. Because I've come with some extra stuff here.
Okay, good.
So the viewers aren't going to be able to see because we don't have video.
Yeah.
But I have just pulled out my phone to share with my good friend Joe here something I've discovered.
Yeah.
And I discovered this once I got back home when I was talking to a coworker about this thing, too. I've been here, there, and everywhere to talk about breadsticks and nacho cheese. Right now, I'm pulling up the Pizza Hut app.
Oh, boy.
If you go into the Pizza Hut app, and you've got your state, whatever, like, thing, set to anywhere that's not Indiana. Like, let's say I'm going to set mine for Urbana, Illinois. It's just off the dome. I don't know.
Yeah. Feels right.
Yeah, for sure. And I go carry out. I go to Dips.
Yeah.
There will not be nacho cheese on this.
There's not nacho cheese?
There's not nacho cheese. It's taking a while to load. My signal's clearly not very good in the podcast.
That is crazy to me. I mean, that doesn't seem like a cultural thing.
They have... this is crazy. In Urbana, Illinois, they have Pickle Ranch. I've never seen that.
Huh.
Yeah. No nacho cheese on there.
No nacho cheese.
But if I'm to go to Muncie, Indiana.
Yeah. Well, what if you go to, like, Evansville, Indiana?
I'll check.
Yeah. Like, I wonder, like, how small is this circle?
It's a good question. It's a good...
And I wonder if it's the only circle. I wonder if there's a random spot somewhere out in, like, Utah or something that they like nacho cheese, too.
Could be. Let's see here.
Because I feel like nacho cheese is universally loved. But maybe
I would agree.
You go to a fifth grader's baseball game in Indiana. What am I going to get? Concession? I'm going to get garlic breadstick, nacho cheese.
There it is.
Cheese sauce cheese in Evansville. Sauce.
Evansville.
That's funny.
You'll notice it doesn't have a picture by it.
Yeah. So they don't even have a stock photo. This is just for the Indiana people who seemingly love nacho cheese.
Yeah.
And that's weird. Like, how did they stumble across? You know, like, you have to do your research as a fast food chain to be like, people in Indiana have a weird obsession with nacho cheese, so you have to give them the option of that.
Yeah. The theory, I don't know if I told you this part either. The theory that my coworker talked to about this with, she feels like when she thinks of breadsticks and nacho cheese, first place that comes to her mind is Pizza King.
Yeah, yeah.
And so her theory is that Pizza King's so ubiquitous across Indiana that that's what influenced it, that it's a Pizza King thing, and that it became an Indiana thing because of that. That's her theory.
Yeah, I can get behind that theory, but what I'll say is, Pizza Kings are Indiana, but they're not super widespread
across Indiana. Yeah, they're mostly Eastern Indiana. Like,
it's not everywhere. And there is another, there's like a divide of Pizza Kings, I guess, like where the Pizza King logo's different, and I think pizza's different, too. Like, so I don't know how related those are or not. I don't know the whole story there. But, yeah, that's interesting. Like, maybe it was a Pizza King, and I wonder when Pizza King was, like, you know, started or whatever. When the nacho cheese craze really picked up. Because really, until the last, you know, I would say recent history, meaning, I don't know, 20 years, 25 years, eating out has become much more popular.
Oh, yeah.
Even our parents growing up, you hear them talk about, like, you know, going to Wendy's was a special occasion. Mm-hmm. Now we're going out to eat, like, you know, every other day or whatever.
Yeah. And it's not a big deal. If I went to Wendy's for a special occasion, I'd be ticked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like a Frosty is like the big thing of the week. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not that excited about a Frosty. Yeah, it is what it is. It's a Frosty.
It's a dollar.
But, you know, I think that's a big cultural shift. So, it would be, I wonder, like, did our parents grow up with breadsticks and nacho cheese? Because maybe they didn't.
Yes, so we could ask.
We'll do some more research and come back to you next week.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, this is an interesting topic. At least to us. Maybe it's not interesting to anyone else, but...
I find it fascinating.
It's kind of like we got down that whole rabbit hole of the Penn merger.
Yeah.
You know, like
this is Penn 4.0.
Yeah, and if you don't know what the Penn merger, I don't know if we ever talked about it here, but it's how you pronounce P-I-N versus P-E-N. In Silas and I's line, growing up in Indiana, you don't pronounce them differently.
It's Penn.
If I'm saying P-I-N or P-E-N, you don't know a Penn. I'm not saying it differently, but my wife, who's from the East Coast, from Delaware. Mm-hmm. She says that there's a distinct difference, you know, I would heavily push back on. But she says, like, I don't even know, peen and pen. Like, I don't know how you can distinguish it. It's hard for me to do.
I feel like every time she talks about, like, there being a difference and pronounces them, it still sounds the same when she says it to me.
Yeah, it does. It's hard to determine, but she says that there's a difference, so...
Yeah.
But that's she's crazy. Outnumbered in Indiana, unfortunately. I'm sure if we went to Delaware, we'd feel outnumbered, so...
I know I was right.
Penn and Penn, they're pronounced the same.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, that is... I like that term. It's a good one. It, you know, it can stir some conversation. You know, I'm part of this Facebook club. If you're not a part of it, I know you don't really Facebook much, but it's the Dull Men's Club.
I've heard you talk about that.
And it's just people posting about really dull things that they find interesting, like this. Like, I should post about this and see what I get, because it's nationwide, this club.
Yeah.
So I should take a poll and be like, who out there is eating breadsticks and nacho cheese? Is this an Indiana thing?
Yeah, that'd be an interesting thing to find out.
Yeah. I'll have to do some research and make a post about it and see what people say.
If you do, you let me know what the results are.
Yeah.
Okay. I will say, I mean, to your point earlier, you said, like, people love nacho cheese.
Yeah.
One of the responses I got from a friend out there, which I'll keep it as, you know, as a family show, I'll keep it as clean as possible. He told me, he said, that sounds really good if I was inebriated. Okay. He was like, if I was in that state, I think I would come up with that combination too.
Yeah. Well, but I would say to that, you know, people say that about Taco Bell, and Taco Bell is one of the greatest restaurants there is.
You eat a lot of Taco Bell, so you can play some extra cheese.
Yeah. I mean, I would rather have a $5 cheesy Gordy Crunch than a $50 steak some days.
For sure.
You know, because
it's got so much going on.
Right. Exactly. So much flavor, spicy ranch. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I digress. You know, it's a good turbulence, and we're expecting a pretty smooth flight the rest of the way. So
Yeah,
I guess, you know, we're just kind of getting back into the swing of things here, and obviously there's a lot to catch up on that we really haven't discussed much of. And so Silas, I guess I'll let you start, but we're kind of going to cut you up to speed of why we're taking a hiatus and kind of, I guess, what we've learned during this time of, you know, you obviously had, we were joking beforehand because I said, we've had two big things. And Silas was saying, like, oh yeah, semester of school is very, you know, analogous with a
newborn baby.
Newborn babies. But anyways, a semester of school in Vermont, I mean, that is very unique, and it's, I'm sure, a growth process. So tell us a little bit of, you know, how did it go, and what'd you take away from it? What would be your lesson that you learned?
Yeah, I mean, it went very, very well, I would say. It was, 6 weeks of classes, and during that time, I think this year I focused a little bit more on, like, hanging out with friends and spending time with people that I'd met last year and was close with, than I did really on, like, focusing on knocking my schoolwork out of the park.
Right, yeah, school's secondary, not important.
Yeah, for sure. But I completed two classes. I recently got my grade back. I got an A- and an A.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Felt like nice. I did pretty all right.
Yeah.
I took a class on the 1890s as a literary period, and canon and counter-canon American drama.
We
looked at plays.
I can't imagine anything more exciting than those two classes.
Yeah. I'll sign you up next year. I'll bring you with me, Joe.
That sounds very exciting.
I'm sure that all of them in the movie will do fine without you.
Yeah.
Letting you take a couple weeks.
Yeah.
But, no, it was good. It was great. Really liked, one of my professors. The other one, she was fine. She was okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like as far as, like you had mentioned, like, oh, let's talk about our takeaways, as far as that goes, as we were planning out what we want to talk about this episode, I felt like the thing that just kept coming back to mind was, like, trusting God even when your expectations don't match up.
Mm.
Where I felt like, you know, it was my second semester, I kind of knew what to expect going into it. And then in a lot of ways, it was very, very different from what I expected. But in a way that was very good, and God was clearly working through.
Yeah.
And so I felt like that was God challenging me to enter into things a little bit less as far as it goes with like my expectations, and just trust that he's got my best interests in mind.
Yeah. Trust in his plan.
Now, I mean, let's look over to you, Joe. You had a life almost as big as a semester of school.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Fatherhood, what's that like?
It's been great, you know. Starting from, you know, I think, I don't know if we discussed this, but the birth process in the hospital, I don't do well with hospitals, do well with, you know, I pass out frequently at hospitals because I don't do well with that medical stuff. So I was very concerned leading up to it that I was going to pass out. So I'm happy to report I did not pass out at all. In fact, I didn't even get queasy one time, and I was in the room the whole time. Like, I mean, I took the walks, obviously. It's a long process, but, I never got queasy one time. Now, what I'll say, not to scare any women out there that are going to give birth, but what I've told people is, at some point, it became more of a war zone than a medical thing. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, she was in a lot of pain, screaming pain, crying pain, like, just, it was brutal by the end. Like, it's just a lot of pain. It's very long. It's very painful. Now, everyone's experience is a little different. She did it without the epidural.
Okay.
So, you know, she was feeling the full thing.
Yeah.
So I think it came more about, like, my instinct of, like, wanting the best for her and wanting to, like, I was just trying to comfort her as much as I could, because there's nothing I can do to control it, and there's nothing you can do once that process starts, because that baby's coming out one way or the other. It's like there's gonna be pain no matter what, so there's nothing you can do to stop it. So that was definitely an experience. And then, you know, that's just really the beginning, because then you have this newborn that you have to take care of. As the dad, there's not a whole lot still that I can really do. You know, I can change some diapers and such, but what's crazy, one of the things that I was telling Olive, and this is kind of just a side note, but from the time that baby was just a little egg to now, even to this date, like a month after, her body is the only thing that has nourished this baby, which is pretty weird to think about.
From
the time that it was just an egg to now an 11-pound baby that's 1 month old, that baby has never had anything exterior of Otto's body. Which is weird to think about, isn't it? Has solely grown the thing.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, her womb to now with, you know, breastfeeding and everything. It's like, that's it. You are the source of her food.
That's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. I never really thought about it that way, but I'm like,
me neither.
For months, that'll be the case.
Yeah.
So, pretty incredible, really. Mm-hmm. But I would say I learned a lot of the same that you were describing as far as trusting God's plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that I went into it with some expectations, but I really didn't have a ton because I felt like there's no way I'm going to know what to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt almost overwhelming to try to know what to, and there's so much online about, like, this is what you should be doing with your newborn. This is what you should be, you know, even about the birth process. Like, this is how you should go about the birth. And even that birth process did not go the way at all that we thought it was going to go. It was great, and everything about it was great, but it didn't go the way we thought.
Yeah.
And same with the newborn stage. It's like, we prepared as much as you can, but you can't prepare, really.
No,
you got to do it. And so, I feel like, recently my prayers have very much been, like, for wisdom and for guidance, because, like, I don't know what I'm doing, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like every first time parents probably feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I would say a lot of the same. Like, I don't know the expectations, even if I had expectations, they change pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But just trusting in God's plan and trusting that, you know, he's obviously got a plan and everything. It's just letting go of mine, I guess.
Mm. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the idea of letting go.
Yeah, and we actually, you know, recently been, in my Bible study, we've been talking about the story of Joseph. We've kind of been going through Genesis and in some of the, you know, I don't know, heroes of the faith, I guess, if you want to call it that. And so we were going through that story, and it just kind of reminded me of a lot of the same as well.
Hmm.
You know, from when Joseph was a young boy and he has these dreams that all of his old brothers are going to bow down to him and his father. It's like kind of a weird dream, and he goes and tells them all that dream.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, you know, I don't know if that's a good idea to tell your brothers that kind of dream.
Yeah, maybe keep that one on the down.
Right. But I'm sure at that point he had expectations of how life was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I've had the dream. It must be true. Like, you guys are going to bow down to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't like that, obviously. But then Joseph's life really takes a turn because they kind of throw him into a pit and then they sell him into slavery. He goes to Egypt into slavery. Does well in slavery as well as he can while being enslaved. And then gets wrongly accused and thrown into prison. Then forgot about in prison. And he spends years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's not what he was expecting God's plan to be when he had a dream of his brother coming down to him.
Yeah.
But the thing that's kind of encouraging is he was faithful the whole way through.
Hmm.
You know, it kind of keeps, no matter where he was at, you know, he was in slavery and he was just faithful to God, and God saw him through and was with him and blessed him. And, you know, it says that people around him saw that God was blessing him.
Yeah.
And they could tell. It was like a radiant beam kind of thing, like, you know, wow, God's really blessing him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets thrown into prison. And then the warden basically gives him the keys and is like, hey, you're in charge of the prison because I can tell that God's, you know, blessed you.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a weird thing to tell someone who's in prison.
Yeah, for sure.
But obviously something was different about him.
Oh, absolutely.
And he trusted God through that process as well. And one of the biggest things, actually, that not to go on too long about it, but I think one of the most interesting things that I read this time that I had never really thought about before was, so he interprets the baker and the cupbearer's dreams in prison. And he tells the cupbearer, you'll be restored, and the baker that you'll be impaled and beheaded, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great thing to tell someone. And that happens, just as they say. And Joseph said to the cupbearer, remember me when you're out of prison. Like, tell Pharaoh about me or something.
Yeah.
And he forgets about him for 2 years. But then Pharaoh has a dream, and he can't interpret it. And he's like, and his wise men can't interpret it. And he's like, does anyone know someone who can interpret this dream for me?
Yeah.
And the cupbearer remembered Joseph at that point. Mm. 2 years had passed, so clearly he kind of forgot. But Pharaoh pulls him out of prison and tells him his dream, and is like, I've heard that you can interpret this dream. And the first thing that Joseph says is, now keep in mind, this is Pharaoh he's talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph's not an Egyptian, so he doesn't even belong in this land necessarily. He's in prison, so clearly Pharaoh knows he's been in prison for years and doesn't really probably know exactly why, but maybe.
Yeah.
And then the first thing he says to Pharaoh out of his mouth after Pharaoh says, I hear you can interpret dreams, he says, I cannot. One of the first things he says. Which I thought, I never really thought about that.
Yeah, me neither.
But I'm like, if I was in Joseph's situation, that would not be the first thing out of my mouth.
No, definitely.
Well, definitely, yes, yes, sir. Like, I can, let me tell you about this. But yeah, he's like, I cannot. But my God is the one who is the creator of all things and the creator of dreams. Like, he can help interpret it. Just, you know, tell me what your dream is and I'll, you know, go to him about it. Which is a pretty interesting thing. Like, it's just an interesting first response, I guess.
Yeah, and it feels, you know, obviously good for him to give God credit. And, like, that clearly is, I think, the thing to take from that is, like, oh, you should give God the credit, not take it for yourself.
Yeah.
But I think if I was Pharaoh, I'd be like, that was an unnecessary conversation. That was an unnecessary part of the conversation.
Yeah.
I didn't need to know that detail necessarily.
Yeah,
I feel like I'd get annoyed if I was Pharaoh, but maybe that's, you know.
Well, yeah, and that's what you'd think. And I think, too, like, when I think about giving God credit for something, it's almost as a result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, wow, that went really well. Pharaoh restored me. I'm now, like, second in charge to Pharaoh. Like, thank you. Thank you, God. That was great.
Uh-huh.
But, again, it goes back to our expectations. Like, so if my expectations, like, your plan should be for me to be in second in charge in Egypt, and that happens, then you're like, oh, thank you, God. But if he throws back in prison, then you're probably upset and not thanking God for that.
True, yeah.
But maybe his plan is in prison.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's so many just, there's little things in there about that whole, like, expectations in God's plan, and, you know, if we really could see God's whole plan. Someone in our Bible study actually said something about how we're talking about, like, will we know what happened on earth when we die and we're in heaven, we're in wherever, you know, will you know what happened on earth? Will you know anyone who you were friends with? Will you know your own wife? Will you know, you know,
yeah,
how will that work in heaven? And she said something that's pretty interesting. She said, I think that we are we're very finite on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that nothing will seem as big of a deal or as negative of a deal when we're outside of time and we're outside of linear thinking. Like,
Oh, okay. So
you'll see the whole plan laid out of your life when you're in heaven. Like, you'll see, like, oh, that's why this seemed bad on earth, but God had a plan through this. Like, it wasn't actually bad. There's a specific reason for that. And there's a specific reason for this and for this. We view things very, like, positive and negative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, being jail, negative. Being second in charge in Egypt, positive.
Yeah.
But, like, that's probably not how God really views things. It's, everything is for his purpose and his glory.
Yeah, it's all part of the plan.
Right. And I think that's kind of how, you know, Joseph had that view, obviously, of just being positive in every situation because it was God's plan.
It's a good way to think about it, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's very, like, I don't think about that way very often. You know,
I think it's hard to think about that way.
Yeah, and when I'm having something negative, I feel like the times when I spend most time in prayer and in conversation are the really bad times and really good times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm either praising or praying.
Yeah.
In the bad times, praising in the good times, you know. And it's probably not the best way to go about it because it's not about the physical being, you know.
Yeah, but it's easier to think about when you're in those situations where you're like, oh, wow, things are really going well. I need to, like, thank God for this.
Yeah.
Or if things are really going bad, I need to ask for help.
Right. And I don't think asking for help's a bad thing because there's times when we struggle, but I think there's growth in that struggle. And so I think you can pray for being out of a bad situation, but also learning from that situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's going to be trials. It says that in the Bible. Like, obviously not everything's hunky-dory, but everything can be for God's plan and for God's glory.
It's kind of funny you say that. While I was out east or whatever, I listened to an audiobook that if I say the name Malice, do you know Malice, Joe?
No.
You know Pusha T?
I know Pusha T.
Pusha T's brother.
Okay.
It's in the, they're in a rap group together.
Yeah.
And Malice converted to Christianity a couple of years ago. Or I guess a number of years ago at this point. And then wrote a book about it. And he reads his own audiobook. It's pretty interesting. I think, I know that you're not a book guy.
Yeah.
But I think that you'd find it interesting because it's very like, the way he reads it, it's almost like a podcast more than it is like a book. But he talks about how his relationship with God grew because he had some pretty serious health scares that came from like the lifestyle that he was leading.
Yeah.
And he met a woman just like out on the street one day while he was just like hanging out with some friends who like came up and approached them and asked them about their relationship with God. And he was like, I felt like at the time I had a good relationship with God and I really wasn't worried about it. And he was like, as soon as these health scares started happening, he was like, I called her because she gave me her card and I just want to talk to her about like my relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes in and she's like, God's giving you these health issues because he wants you to have something to bring closer to him. And he like, talks about how much of a blessing it was to have those like health issues because it made him so reliant on God and how thankful he was for that struggle or that suffering.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of those kind of stories where it's like, wow, this is really bad in my life. But looking back, it's like, you know, there's obviously a clear purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes there's harder times when you don't see a clear purpose.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
But I think that if you go into it with no expectations, with the expectation that everything is for God's plan, for God's glory,
mm-hmm.
then I think you can see the good in it.
Yeah.
You know, it may not be a good situation, but one of the things too that I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but Olive and I were talking about this, how sometimes we almost love the healing more than the healer. And, you know, a lot of situations like, you're praying because you have this sickness, and once God heals you, you're like, wow, that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, okay, what happens if you don't get better?
Mm-hmm.
What if your purpose was to be in the hospital, to reach out to people, and use your platform to encourage others, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I think that, you know, if you're a surrendered person, and you've given up control of your life, you're saying, you know, like, my life is a vessel, then it doesn't matter what the circumstance is.
Mm-hmm.
The circumstance should matter.
Yeah.
Because you've given up your life.
For sure. 100%. I would agree.
But, yeah. It's definitely tough because we're imperfect humans and
absolutely.
And we strive for the physical things because we can... It's tangible. You know, you can see it. And you know
reach out and grab it.
But, yeah, I like that. That's definitely a hard lesson, but a really important one, I think.
Yeah.
Just let go of those expectations and trust in God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, well, I guess that's the challenge. I was going to say, you know, we usually give a challenge for the listeners, but yeah, I don't know. Let go of expectations, right?
Yeah. It's a hard thing to do, but it's a good thing to do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that is our time. We've safely landed the jet plane. Again, you know.
Yeah.
So far, we're undefeated on safely landing it. But, 100%. You know,
it's going to be a rough episode when we don't.
Yeah, exactly. But, all right. And we'll keep you updated as far as the situation goes in Kenya and such. Hopefully, on the next episode, we can give you an update. And we'll see you next week.